At times I thought we'd never make it. Now we on our way to greatness. And all I ever took was patience. I used to feel so devastated. At times I thought we'd never make it. But now we on our way to greatness. And all that ever took was patience. I used to feel so. At times I thought we'd. But now we on our way.
Welcome to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. I'm Rev Yearwood, President and CEO of the Hip Hop Caucus.
And I'm Mustafa Santiago Ali, Senior Vice President of the Hip Hop Caucus. Welcome to our radio show and podcast that delivers real talk on climate change and environmental justice. No sides, just the facts and stronger communities.
Man, I like that, Mustafa.
Yes, sir.
Man, I want to say thank you to WPFW here in Washington, D.C., and all of our supporters, and also a big thank you to all of our listeners who tune in each week. We love you.
And you can check out the show's blog at think100.info, and be sure to follow us online at think100show. Let me hit you with that one more time. Check out the blog at think100.info and follow us at think100.show.
So, Mustafa, I am excited for today's show. We've got maybe our youngest and coolest show yet.
It's about to be lit.
Indeed. First, before we get into that, let's talk about some of our shout-outs, some things that are going on in the climate movement. Today is the anniversary. I don't know, I hate that word anniversary. I think it's commemoration, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 4-year commemoration of the death of Eric Garner. And so I'm actually, you know, rocking to those who know. You got to tune in at Think 100. I'm actually rocking my dear comrade and friend, Erica Garner, who was Eric Garner's daughter. And I guess I just want to say this for those who don't know. Many of you saw, 4 years ago on July 17th, 2014, you saw Eric Garner being choked out. And we still need justice for that. But one of the connections, people are tuning in right now to Hip Hop Caucus, Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. They say, man, Rev, you know, why are y'all talking about Eric Garner? And ain't that Black Lives Matter? What's the connection between climate change in that regard? And so it's a major connection. One, you know, and Mustafa, you can speak to this, mm-hmm. you know, in this aspect about just how poor people and people of color are on the front lines of climate mm-hmm. change. We're gonna get into that in this show. But more importantly, I think people don't understand is that Eric Garner had asthma, and 68% of people of color live within 30 miles of a coal-fired power plant. And even though in that borough in New York City, that borough actually received an F for air quality. I bring all this up for this reason, because as we saw Eric Garner being choked out saying, "I can't breathe," what we knew is that even though he was choked out by the NYPD police, he was also dying because of the toxic air within his community. And that would fulfill itself actually in a terrible way, because as his amazing daughter, Erica Garner, would be fighting for her father, she would die early this year because of an asthma attack. It's just that, and this is actually one of my saddest hats, y'all, because, you know, I wore Eric Garner's hat in the White House, mm-hmm. And then now to be wearing Erica Garner on my head, this lets me know this is real, what we're doing. So anyway, shout out to the Garner family, man. Shout out for all those who are still fighting up there in New York City. And we will not forget all those who die unjustly. Mustafa, you got any shout outs for us this week?
Yeah, we want to make sure that we let everybody know tomorrow is Nelson Mandela's 100th birthday, a true freedom fighter.
That's right.
Not only fighting against the issues that were going on in South Africa, but across our planet. So let's make sure that we keep his memory alive, but not just his memory, but also what he stood for and the work that he did.
And that's important. We have our own apartheid movement going on.
Well, yes.
Right now,
yes.
We need to divest from fossil fuels. Come on, y'all, let's make that divestment movement happen. We have our own movement. So we got to have, I guess, our own Sun City type thing going on.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Our own real Sun City.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? So anyways, y'all might know we have our third co-host is not here. We got to say that now, because now we have three of us.
Yes, we do.
So we have the amazing Antonique Smith. But the problem with Antonique, though, y'all, that she's a superstar.
Superstar.
And then we're not. So we can be here every week. And she's actually making Marvel movies and other things. But she's going to be here this weekend.
Yes.
She's going to be coming to D.C., taking a minute from Luke Cage and all of her other things to hang out for what is actually in the studio. So mm-hmm. I'm excited about what we got going on. So, Mustafa, give us an introduction of who we have here in the studio.
That's right, Rev. Today we've got in the studio with us three founding members of Zero Hour. If y'all don't know about Zero Hour, you need to run real fast and Google so you can make sure you're at the march this Saturday. I mean, they are extremely inspiring. I can't tell you enough. I just wish everybody, Rev, could be here with us in the studio to see these incredible young leaders who are not
Indeed.
Waiting. They are making it happen today, and they're taking the fight into their own hands.
I know that's right. This fight is certainly not one that they asked for. The climate fight is a problem Zero Hour inherited from older generations that have also failed to be active enough to combat it. That's part of what makes these three amazing and their organization they represent so impressive. They have embraced the fight and are making a huge impact across the country. So let me introduce for those right now. I wish I had a drum roll. I can make this. We can do this. And we can get there. It is. See, there it is. All right, now. Come on. So first, we have Jamie Margolin. She is the founder and president of Zero Hour. Jamie, what's happening?
Hi, everyone. I'm so glad to be here.
Man, it is great to have you. Next up, we have Nadia Nazar, right?
Yep.
All right, now. And aren't you from BMore?
I am from BMore.
I like that. You know, we got to talk about that BMore. You know, we got Hip Hop Caucus Baltimore going on. We got to make sure we get you in the loop with that. We got a block party going on. But she is also a founding member, and I love this. You know, I'm with the arts. So she's the art director and a co-sponsorship lead for Zero Hour. Make it up for Nadia, y'all. Come on, y'all. And then last but not least, we have Madeline Tu. And she's also a – Madeline, where are you from?
I'm from New Jersey.
You know, I like that. You from what part of New Jersey?
Bergen County, so northern.
Yeah. Okay. You're not from Brick City then? From Newark?
Yep.
What's up? Madeline, too, is also a family member and director. And I like this. She's director of fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
No cash, no cause. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's making sure that Zero Hour is happening.
She works hard.
And that's a great thing. So we're going to hop right into this. Actually, what I want to do, first, tell folks what's going on this weekend. And then I want to actually read for people your guiding principles. And we're going to kind of hop into that. But tell them what's happening, a little background on Zero Hour. Jamie, what's up with you?
Yeah, so we are gearing up for a historic weekend of youth climate action this weekend in D.C. with sister actions around the world. We have 3 days of action laid out on July 19th, the day after tomorrow. We have the Youth Climate Lobby Day on Capitol Hill, where young people are going to be talking face-to-face with our politicians and telling them what we need from them in order to have a livable future. So, like, the main event that most people have heard of is the Youth Climate March, but then, like, with the Lobby Day, we're delivering, like, the platform that we're going to talk about today, and we're really showing them, like, giving them concrete steps so that they can't just say, I don't know what these kids are marching for. Like, no, we literally spoon-fed you these demands. Like, So we're in it for the long run, and so the Lobby Day on July 19th on Capitol Hill, it's going to be all youth talking to our leaders, is the way that we ensure that that we're in this for the long run, and that we're not just here to march, make some noise, take some pictures, and go away. We're here to do the work. Mm-hmm. And then, Nadia, do you want to talk about the Art Day?
Yeah, so the Art Day is this Friday, July 20th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at DuPont Circle.
D.C.
And D.C., Washington, D.C. And it's an event where we're using art and music to uplift the D.C. community through climate action and climate solution. Mm-hmm. And we have performers like Chutesca Martinez and Ariel mm-hmm. Martinez-Cohen, who are both young singers and rappers that talk about climate change for their music.
That's what's up. And don't he have a new album coming out? I think he has a new album that came out, right?
Yeah, Chitesta.
Oh, he's from Colorado. He's a good one, so he'll be here on Friday. That's great to know.
Yeah, he's going to be speaking at the march. And Madeline, do you want to tell us?
Yep, sure. So Saturday, July 21st is going to be our Youth Climate March. And basically what we're going to be doing there is first kind of highlighting the voices of youth on the front lines, so people who have been affected by climate change. And then we're going to walk the streets and kind of rally for our youth voices.
So, folks, if you are listening, you were just tuning in to Hip Hop Caucus Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. You are tuning in to Zero Hour, and they are here. They are like, listen, they are fed up. They are, listen, whose streets? Our streets. Mm-hmm. They're about to just bring it. But more importantly, they have some guiding principles, and I think I actually want to read them, because I think it's important for our movement. I think this to me, a lot of us, and I know we talked about this earlier, that you know we have EJ principles, and mm-hmm. we have, I don't think we actually have a general climate movement principles, do we?
No, we don't. We have environmental justice principles, we have climate justice principles, and now these young ladies are putting it down with these principles to help a new generation to move forward.
And that's important, because we know many of you in the climate movement are listening to this. We either hear this through the podcast or are listening right now all over the country. So this is actually historic. I want to thank you, but I want to get into it. So
yeah.
I want to read it, and then I think I want to then let's discuss it, and let's make that conversation happen. So first, I think you can get this on your website too as well, for those who want to read along.
This is zerohour.org.
So this is zerohour.org. If you want to check out that, you can read along with me, but I'm going to do that for you, for all those who are listening right now. So first, as a movement, we believe. Yes, get some water.
Drum roll again.
Yeah, drum roll. This is not one.
Gettysburg address. What's going on?
We're ready. I'm gonna give it. Make sure people can hear it.
Okay.
As a movement, we believe first, those who are on the front lines of any movement should lead that movement. And number two, on the front lines of climate change is the global south, people of color, indigenous peoples, youth, people with disabilities, poor people, women, queer and trans people, and people belonging to marginalized faiths. Mm-hmm. Three, in our youth movement to combat climate change, we uplift the youth voices of these communities. Next, youth leadership is transformational and visionary. Youth must lead because they have always shifted culture toward progress and collective liberation. Mm-hmm. Next, systems of oppression, capitalism, colonialism, racism, and patriarchy have led to climate change. Therefore, we must shift our culture away from these systems. Next, intersectional movement building is the only way we can achieve collective liberation, because working together on intersecting issues will unify communities who wish to join our struggle for a safe and healthy future for all. Next, the people must take action rather than waiting for elected officials to lead. Next, the elected officials must comply with the demands of the youth. Therefore, they must pass and enforce legislation and support policies that protect life and our future on this planet. And last, this is a revolution. Mm. Let's get into that. Ladies, why did you write these guiding principles?
These guiding principles were actually written by one of our core organizers, Kibriti, who is a frontline youth, and so getting his perspective on this was really important, and he really took the lead on this platform.
Yeah, Kibriti is a climate refugee from the Congo, so he along with several other people, this platform was actually written by young people of color, and it was also there was a lot of input amongst frontline communities in this, writing the guiding principles and the platform that we're going to get into. So on the why, like, why did we write these guiding principles? We wanted to kind of set, like, a consensus of, like, what we were fighting for as a movement and make sure that we're all on the same page.
What do you mean when you say that?
Well, because there are a lot of people in the climate movement who kind of, like, there are people who come at it from a very privileged place where it's just, like, in their minds, they're just, like, science and lowering carbon levels. And then there are people coming at it from, like, my family can't breathe. So we want to make sure that everyone is aware that how intersectional this issue is, and that we're not just fighting for, like, carbon to lower in the atmosphere, but we're fighting for the lives that it's affecting.
And let me just say this. All three of you are people of color.
Yes.
So when you say privilege, let's get into it. I mean, this is you know, you on Think 100%. So you can get into it on here. We got real talk, right, Mustafa?
Yeah, we have some real talk.
We can have real talk. So as young people, because also give your ages.
I'm Jamie and I'm 16.
I'm Madeline, 15.
I'm Nadia and I'm 16.
Wow. So, okay. So this that gives you all some perspective on these amazing leaders in here today. So talk about why dealing with privilege was important for you and guiding these guiding principles.
Well, because a lot of the damage that is done to our climate is done by people who just frankly aren't going to have to bear the worst consequences of climate change. It's going to be the people on the front lines who don't have this privilege on their side. So that's something that we need to address because it's kind of easy for those people who are contributing to climate change to think, oh, well, this isn't going to affect me. I'm just going to keep living life how I always have been. And for government, you know, it's easier to just kind of keep going on the road that we've always been going with no trouble. And that's, I mean, we find that unacceptable because of the lives that it does impact.
Mm. I mean, again, it's such a blessing to be here with you all. You guys are just so incredible. I feel like I'm looking at my little sisters and just so super proud. Can you guys talk a little bit also? So, you know, this Guiding Principles document is light years ahead of where lots of other folks are in the climate movement.
Right.
Let me just be very clear and very honest. Someone who's been doing this since I was a student. Can y'all talk a little bit about the intersectionality? You referenced that and why that's important.
But when you say light years ahead, come on, don't say, you can't throw that. That's a hand grenade. When you say light years ahead, what do you mean when you say that?
Well, I'm very clear. Everybody knows. I give you real talk.
Let's get there.
There are so many well-meaning folks who are in our movement who have forgotten that frontline communities are where many of the fossil fuel facilities are located.
Right.
They are the ones who are receiving the impacts both when those emissions go up in the air, and of course, then we all have to deal with the impacts of climate change. So when these young, powerful sisters who are sitting here in this room reference that, when we have so many folks in the climate movement who forget that aspect, that's why I say that they are light years ahead in their thinking, in your implementation, and also in helping to move this movement to where it needs to be. So that's why I think this is an extremely powerful movement that is going on. This is why July 21st is so important and the other dates that you all referenced. So going back to my initial question about intersectionality, unfortunately, sometimes we have folks who forget how powerful that is and how necessary that is. Can you all talk a little bit about why you sort of infuse that into your work?
Yeah, so a lot of people, according to their identities and who they are, they're affected by climate change differently. And that's a really big aspect that other green organizations have been forgetting. So we wanted to bring everyone to the table, make sure that everyone's voices are heard. Because if some people aren't liberated, then no one's liberated. And we can't stay in this community where we're all humans here and we all just want to be happy people. And we can't keep holding each other back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people, they talk to me, they're like, okay, like they read through our guiding principles and like platform. They're like, this is extensive. We're not just, you know, we have an issue to solve. We can't just go out of our way to include every single social justice issue and like sing the kumbaya, like, come on. But it's not about us being obnoxious or like snowflakes or just, you know, giving everyone a cookie. That's not what it's about. There's no solving climate change without solving the systems that caused it, because you can't solve an issue with the same thinking that caused it. So if you just go...
Hold on, Jamie. Say that again.
you can't solve an issue with the same thinking that caused it.
Mm. All right, paradigm shifting. Go ahead, girl.
Yeah, so these systems, if you take climate change and just think of it as like within, just keep all of the systems that we have right now and just lower the carbon levels, you're missing the whole point of like, how did we get here? And you're also missing the whole point. A lot of times when people talk about climate change, they talk about how like we're all in the same boat. And yes, we're all on this earth and eventually everyone is going to be feeling the effects and people, but it's not people equally feelings effects. And when I talk about systems of oppression, like racism, et cetera, anyone who's a victim of a system of oppression is automatically going to be more impacted by climate change than someone who isn't. So take, for example, indigenous people. There's a reason why the Dakota Access Pipeline was illegally built on their land. And actually, the Standing Rock Youth, several leaders of the movement are going to be speaking at the march on July 21st. So you don't want to miss that in D.C. But anyway, initially, the pipeline was not going to be built there. It was going to be built in a majority white town, but then, unfortunately, our society gives privilege to people with lighter skin. So then they're like, okay, we'll just build it through indigenous land. And they were able to get away with it because indigenous people are already victims of like systems of oppression, racism, colonialism. So they already like didn't have power, at least weren't seen as having power in the eyes of like the people who have the money and control. So that's why the pipeline was built and it's already leaked. So that's just an example of how people who are at the receiving end of like discrimination automatically feel the most effects of climate change. And we're going to have this little 7-year-old girl named Havana who's going to be talking about like how women around the world are most affected by climate change. And it's really just any system of oppression, whoever's on the receiving end is automatically going to be most affected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's one thing to say, you know, yeah, we're fighting for you, we're on your side, but it's another to kind of try to highlight those voices and let them speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Madeline, what do you mean when you say that? When you say they need to speak for themselves, what do you mean?
Well, a lot of these people that we are highlighting in our march on Saturday, they might not have the position in society to be heard by large populations because of the oppression that they have faced. So kind of putting them on the mic and letting them speak about their own experiences with climate change and how they've been affected, that kind of forces people to listen to their story and what they have to say.
Yeah, and then there's like this whole thing with like white savior complex, male savior complex, where it's one thing if you're like, let's say, I'm Latina, but I'm also very light skinned. So I pass in society a lot. And let's say like, if I got up on a rally and started talking about like, the discrimination that people with darker skin face, and then people are like, oh my God, Jamie's such a hero. Look at her standing up for like people of color. Then it's like, it's kind of taking the credit, it's kind of like making yourself the hero of people who don't need to be saved. They just need to be given a microphone. So we're not going to be up here just saying like, oh yeah, we stand with indigenous people. We're like giving them a space on our stage to talk for themselves because they know what's best for their community.
Yeah. Reb, I'm upset because I don't have a pen and I should be taking notes because they dropping some serious science on folks today.
They are. And I actually just want to, so for those who are just tuning in, this is not a moment. This is a movement. And so we're here with the leaders of Zero Hour, and they have a youth climate march this weekend all over the country and parts of the world.
Yes.
And so the main, demonstration will take place in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. on the 21st, and they've already have different aspects from an art collective on the Friday, and they are going because they understand either you shape policy or policy will shape you. And so they will be there on Thursday making it happen. So I wanted to say, I'm going to actually come back to, you know, as many of you know, I've been arrested a few times for a few pipeline protests. So I'm happy to well, I'm not happy anybody had to get arrested, but, you know, I'm just happy that y'all doing that. That's a good piece. I want to go back to two things. Because as you, all of you, were born in the 21st century.
Yeah, that's right.
And so every year of your life, it has gotten hotter.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so you are dealing with something now, and you are now marching on Washington and marching all over this planet. And you're galvanizing young people The thing for me is this, and there are two things you said. One thing is that when many people look back at Dr. Dorothy Hype, who was my mentor, or Dr. King and others, one of the things they fought primarily for equality. And within your principles, you're still lacing in equality as a part of that. But the reality is that you are now not only fighting for equality, but you're fighting for existence.
Yeah, we're fighting for our lives.
You're fighting for your lives. And so I need y'all to kind of speak on that, because one of the last principles you have is this. This is a revolution.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which means that by any means necessary to have the transition happen from fossil fuels to clean energy. It means you're all in. Mm-hmm. And I look at you at 15 and 16. I mean, that's a heavy statement. What does it mean to be all in for you?
Right. Well, I think our name kind of nicely explains that, that this is zero hour, because, you know, scientists suggest that in order for us to live a livable and sustainable future, it needs to be at 350 ppm of carbon dioxide, the air. And this year, I mean, we've exceeded 410 ppm. So, I mean, there is...
Madeline, for those, we got a lot of young folks and a lot of people in the hip-hop community. Sometimes when they hear that, explain what that means. When you say 350 parts per million carbon atmosphere, what does that mean?
Right. We're talking about the concentration of carbon dioxide in the air that will kind of allow us to foster a successful and livable future.
And so now 350 is... Where we is our limit, right?
Yeah, where we should be,
right?
At most.
And so, if you have a for those listening, if they say your blood pressure at the height should be nowhere over 150, then we are now at 250.
We're about to stroke out.
We're about to stroke. Our heart is beating through our chest. So now we're there. So what does that mean for future generations?
We are already in danger, based on, I mean, the numbers that we touched upon. There is no fallback room, no wiggle room. And that means that if we don't take action now, if the government doesn't take action to try to mitigate these numbers, then our well-being, our livelihood could be jeopardized. It will be jeopardized.
Mm-hmm. And it's already happening right now. Almost 5,000 people died in Puerto Rico because of Hurricane Maria, and all of the hurricanes have been pushing people out of their homes. And these natural disasters are only going to keep happening. And I actually made an artwork that you can see on Saturday about natural disasters and how they're affecting our lives so much. And they're just going to keep increasing. And we don't know how our lives are going to be, and that's really going to affect our future decisions.
It's really scary because, I mean, we're like 15, 16, you know, Madeline was talking about how, you know, we were working and she's like, my mom's trying to schedule like a college tour, which just puts us in perspective of like, we're trying to figure out our lives. Madeline, like, she came to the headquarters of the lake because like she was doing like SAT prep, which just is kind of, it gives you a sense of just like, we're kids, right? We're just trying to like get through like high school. And so people are constantly asking us like, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? What college? Blah, 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 decide your life. And I'm like, I would, but also like, will the planet even be livable for me to grow up in? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I was born after 9/11. So like, not only has just TSA and airport hypersecurity always been a reality for me, but just so has the fact that life as we know it is coming to an end. And there was just never a time when the climate crisis wasn't looming over me. Like, there was never an aha moment. Every year I've been alive pretty much has been the hottest year on record. Mm-hmm. And that goes for all three of us. Yep. So it's just become very normalized, and the conversations in high schools are very scary. Like, kids will be talking about like where we want to go this summer, places we want to see, and they'll be like, oh yeah, I should probably see it now because like by the time I'm older it'll be gone. And that's just like normal. Like, we're just growing up like, yes, this will be gone by then, this will be gone by then. So we're just like growing up well aware. And then like my friend's like, yeah, I don't want to have kids because like, what's the world going to look like for them? Like, this is the conversations happening in American high schools.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a burden that we shouldn't have to bear. I mean, like Jamie said, we're thinking about our futures. We're thinking about what college we want to go to, what courses we want to take next year. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be having to think about, you know, will I make it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So sort of along that line, what do you guys think have been to date? And I know you're still, you know, still building, growing, evolving. What have been some of the biggest challenges and some of the successes as well?
I would say the greatest challenge that we've faced is just the disparity between ages with the people that we're communicating with. So a lot of my work, since I am, again, the director of fundraising, has been, you know, reaching out to adults who are working within the environmental movement and beyond. And we have gotten a lot of support and a lot of success there. But at the same time, that comes with this kind of assumption that youth are not responsible enough to hold out a successful event or kind of utilize funds properly.
Yeah. So there was actually this person who shall not be named who literally like was like, sorry, we don't feel like it's right to provide funding for you, but if you want some, like a bunch of chocolates, and I'm like, really? It's going to be like 100 degrees like, wow. in the summer and you just want to like feed us candy? Like what? I remember Madeline forwarded me this email and that was like before we had like reached our fundraising goals. We were like really trying to fundraise, and then she's just like, look. And I like, I wanted to like laugh and scream at the same time because it was so funny, but also so insulting.
Yeah.
And some people, I mean, no matter how much interest they might have in our movement and our message, they're not able to support us financially, and that's definitely understandable. We're talking more about kind of this stigma, I'd say, that youth aren't able to do what we're doing.
Yeah, well, we know that a little bit sometimes with organizations of color. People assume that you're not going to be able to be financially fiscal. Well, and that's, I'm sorry, you know me, I just call
no,
it out.
No. Well, we I think, and that's something that we should, I mean, so let me just say this and share that unfortunately, that is a part of our movement that we need to change. I think actually we should get into that. And actually, I want to put a pin there and come to that. But I also want to read what you believe in this movement, which is important as part of their guiding principles. I want to make sure what they affirm and in this movement. So one of the things, and if you're just tuning in, we have the leaders of Zero Hour, Jamie, Nadia, and Madeline in the studio here with us, and they have I want to make sure, please, this is new. They have a march this weekend, but it's ongoing, and they're literally fighting for their lives. I mean, they've just been saying that, it just broke my heart. I was listening to Madeline to say, man, you know, I wish I could be doing some other pieces, but I got to do this, and so I want to applaud all three of you for that. But also, we can learn, as Masaba said, we can learn some things from these leaders. In this movie, this is what they say. And again, you can go to thisiszerohour.org, correct?
Yeah.
And so if y'all want to read along with me, and then also go there and hit the donate button and whatever else you want to do. And
RSVP for the March, July 21st.
Follow. I think that y'all get your followers are just increasing. So y'all make sure y'all follow them on Instagram and
this
Twitter.
This is Zero Hour for all our social media handles.
There it is. So we want to do that. But this is what they list out in this movement. We will be peaceful and nonviolent. We will be humble and learn from each other. We will extend the hand of friendship. We will demand that our allies take action in solidarity with us. We will work to protect each other. We will not allow the system to divide us. Mm-hmm. We will sow seeds to create a just future. And we affirm that climate change is real. Indigenous rights must be honored. Animals are on the front lines. Nature is the most powerful force. Each generation must learn from each other. Black lives matter. Queer and trans people must be heard. Rape culture must be dismantled. People with disabilities must be included and respected. Marginalized cultures must be treated with dignity. Transformative justice is true justice. Yo, listen, I want to. That's amazing. I want to get into that, and then we're going to kind of get into the people's platform on the other side. You are listening to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. And so we're going to take a little break and come back. I think what you are listening to right now is not only important for the next generation and for the now generation, I think those who've been around for a while in this movement, I think, can learn a few things from Zero Hour. And so this being the four-year anniversary of the death, as we talk about this movement and also breaking silos of the death of Eric Garner, I want to go to the break right now with my brother, J. Cole, and the song that he wrote for Eric Garner, Be Free. J. Cole, Be Free, in honor of, that's our People's Climate Music Song of the Week, in honor of Eric Garner and all those who are fighting in New York. Right now, if you're just tuning in to Hip Hop Caucus, Think 100%, this is the coolest show on climate change. And Zero Hour is here. Young people fighting for the future, mixing it up, making it happen. And we are having a, man, this is a phenomenal, transformative conversation that we are having here with Jamie Margolin, who is the founder and president of Zero Hour, Nadia Nazar, who is the founding member, art director, and co-sponsorship lead for Zero Hour, and Madeline Tu, who is also a founding member and the director of fundraising. And they are fired up and ready to go. And ready to go.
That's right.
No doubt about it. And there is a march. We want everybody who is listening, all those, tell your friends, your uncle, your aunties, whoever you need to your cousin, your next door neighbor, to everybody, to go to thisiszerohour.org, and you can either come to the DC march if you're in DC. For all of folks listening all over the country, you can find one is in LA. There's folks in Fort Lauderdale. There's marches. There's all over the place.
Seattle, Las Vegas, New York City, London. So
you know, get out your soft shoes, you know, and whatever you need.
Sunscreen, guys.
Your sunscreen, and you know, let's get out there and do it. Because this we have to do it. As we said earlier, they are not only fighting for equality, but they are fighting for existence. So, with that being said, you've been vocal about the disconnects between generations in the climate movement. Where do you see this problem at its biggest point, and what steps do you think need to be taken to get on the right path?
Well, the first thing is we can't vote. We didn't choose to allow fossil fuels to continue and to grow, and we didn't choose for climate change to happen in the first place, and we're going to be the one that has to bear this burden and take this on as we become leaders and the next president and government elected officials. And so it's really important that we bridge that gap. And I think that older generations, when they were making decisions, they didn't really consider the future. They didn't consider effects. They just wanted to live in the moment. And we want to live in the moment too, but how do we do that when we have to worry about life and death?
So I want to follow up with that one and Nadia, and that aspect as you were talking. So one of the things here, and this is actually important. So let's say the modern day climate movement. The modern day climate movement, as people would say, starts right, I guess, at the beginning of right around EPA. And EPA will turn 50 next year, Mustafa. Mm-hmm.
It's hardly an EPA at the moment.
No, it's hardly EPA. Actually, Mustafa was I think 40 back when it first got started. He's about 90 now.
Woo!
Shots fired here in the Think 100% studio.
Yeah.
No, but the thing here is that this movement now is 50 years old, right? And it's a lot of the organizations are around that old. The thing here you mentioned, something that's very important, is that that movement was a predominantly white male movement.
Mm-hmm.
And even for the civil rights movement, let's not take about the hook. You know, thank goodness for Bayard Rustin, who was able to fight for LGBTQIA communities back then. Dr. Dorothy Hike couldn't speak at the March on Washington. So even back then, so I want civil rights people to get all, yeah, look at environmental. Civil rights movement was a movement that had a bunch of men, like we love Dr. King and all that, but it was mostly men, and they excluded folks who were others, even in their own movement. And definitely we saw this within the environmental movement as well. Mm-hmm. But even further on, that movement also then excluded people of color, poor people, indigenous communities. And you get to this as you're talking. How do you now balance the past
right
with the present?
Well, the thing is, a lot of people like to pinpoint the environmental movement as starting with, like, the majority white activists in the 60s, but the original environmental movement was the indigenous people who knew how to not screw up the land. I would use another word, but we're alive and I'm not allowed to swear, but you guys know what I mean. And they were really the original environmental activists, like before the EPA was even a thing, before the word activist, or like before there was a United States like government. Like, they were the original. And they don't get enough credit for the work that they keep doing, because people are like, wow, intersectionality, and like, we can't live without wildlife, and you can't eat money or drink oil, like such radical concepts. But they've been yelling that to us for like 500 years and no one's been listening. Mm. So I just want to start off with that. And it's just like, people, Nadia and I actually were doing an interview, like a live stream, and there are a lot of like people who were a part of the older like white 1960s movements, and they were just kind of being annoyed at us for kind of critiquing it and just kind of wanting a cookie and being like, I was there. But it's it's not, it didn't start there, and it started with the indigenous people, so I just want to throw that out there. And
but Jamie, on that point, let me just say this. You are 1,000% correct, and there were people on who are definitely in the indigenous communities who are clearly, and there are folks who were people of color. This goes, you know, and this is we know this. We know this is as a part of the DNA, particularly for the Africans. Mm-hmm. We know this from indigenous communities. So that's correct. But the thing here now, as we were saying, we have folks who offered you a box of chocolates, you know, from a fundraising here, who know no money, here's some chocolates. And they
were truffles, which is even worse because, like, what kid wants truffles? Like, I mean, at least, like, a good chocolate. I mean, like, sure. But, like, come on.
that's actually very funny. Getting offered truffles. And so please know, y'all, that most teenagers don't really want truffles, actually. That's not what they're looking for.
We need funds to start our movement.
But let's go there, though. Let's talk about that. I mean, because I think that this is the thing. So Madeline talked about that earlier. I want to hit on that because what you are also doing here is you're also not just creating a difference within how the movement looks and feels, but also, to me, more important, how it operates. That, to me, is fundamentally more important because we can get out there. What you're saying is this. We can get out there, which happens a lot. We can go out there and speak. You can put a camera on me. You can say, look at them. This is great. And then when the camera goes away, you fundamentally go back to business as usual, mm-hmm. which you are saying, no, we just don't want to get there. We're going to get out there, speak. We're going to be led by people of color. We're going to be led by young people. We're going to be led by all kinds of people who should be leading an indigenous community and people in that aspect. But then you're saying something else. How the movement is, the movement that we were, not only just the climate, but the movement that we were also born into in some aspects, that movement isn't operating correctly. That you are not trusting young people. You are not trusting people of color with resources and infrastructure. So I want to get to that. What are you trying? Because you're being very clear that part needs to change as well. So in that battle, which is as big a battle as some of the other battles you will face, how are you trying to make those changes happen in the structure of the climate movement itself?
Well, we're really trying to do it with our own organization internally. We really wanted to have a diverse group of youth for our core organizers, and that naturally happened to us. The people that reached out to us over social media and were like, I want to help out, or it just naturally became a really diverse group of
because
youth.
Because they felt like welcome for the first time.
We really wanted to welcome.
What do you mean when you say that? They finally felt welcome?
Like, we were very clear about, there are a lot of, like, places, like, youth cohorts of, like, large organizations, but it's all, like, overly managed, like, the adults and, like, the, and typically, like, they're white adults and people who, like, young kids of color, like, don't see themselves in, and so they just feel very uncomfortable. Like, I mean, like, if you're, I've been, like, I mean, as a girl, I'm just using this example, like, if you walk into, like, a room full of, like, only boys in, like, a space, and you suddenly feel like, wait a minute, I don't belong here. It's the same for, like, you know, kids of different communities who, like, walk into a space, and it's very, like, old and white, and then they're just, like, I care about the issue, but I really don't feel welcome. A lot of times, like, kids' voices are, like, vetoed by older generations who are just, like, yeah, that's cute, okay, but, like, older generations, sometimes there are some who, like, really know how to be allies, and then there are some who don't. And so within our organization, like, there's no overarching, like, if you look at our organization and, you know, you see the pictures and are really in charge, if you peel back, like, it's us. Like, it's even, like, within the things like fundraising. Like, Madeline's 15 and she's, like, raising tens of thousands of dollars. And, like, Nadia is 16 and she's, like, managing, like, partnerships and art builds and just directing people. And, like, I'm 16 and I'm the, like, executive director or president, whatever you want to call it. Like, when you look at the power structure of our organization, it's flipped so that we make the decisions and then the adults there help us. And even our adult mentors, like, they're also, like, in the movement, but a lot of our mentors, we have, like, some white mentors, but also a lot of, like, mentors who are from communities of color where these kids can see themselves in and feel comfortable talking about things. Because, like, I've been in spaces where I've just been, like, not really comfortable.
Yeah. And talking about that separation that Jamie touched upon, it's unfortunate and it's really counterproductive that exists within the climate effort, that people feel the need to separate based on who they identify as. I mean, it's counterproductive because we really need all hands together, and we need to feel as one because we're fighting for the same thing.
Yeah, we can. We're all on the same page. We're all fighting the same fight. So that's why it's annoying when, like, I feel people try to co-opt or people try to, like, just, they don't help us at all. And, like, now that they see that we're gaining momentum, they're like, whereas it's like, we've been working for about a year now. So this is not just like a pop-up march that's happening. We have been like, Nadia and I have just like been communicating through social media. We're on opposite sides of the country, but we became friends. And I just met her for the first time, like in person, like last week. And we've been working on this for a long time. And for most of the time, we were just like real underdogs, and we still are. I mean, we're literally working like in a basement, so we're literally underdogs. But that sounded sketchy. Anyway, like before this, when there were no media articles, no press, nothing, then these organizations would be like, nah, you, nah, nah. And then now they're just like, oh, I'm going to slap my name on this. So it's just really counterproductive because we're all fighting the same fight. We all want to, we need to, we have enough going up against the fossil fuel industry and all these other powers to have infighting within, like, within the movement. Like, that's not where we should be fighting. And then, and there have been, and it's funny because, and this is not just the climate movement. This is not just Zero Hour. I've had mentors in, like, the Women's March, mentors in, like, all other, like, movements where they're just, like, honestly, sometimes there's, like, more drama within, like, not drama. I won't say drama, but I would say conflict and just, like, because everyone's so passionate and they believe, like, this is the right way to fight this fight. Whereas what we really need to be focusing on is, like, because that's what, one of our guiding principles, it says, don't let the system divide us. And, right. And a lot of times the system tries to divide us within the environmental movement and make us, like, hate each other or within any movement and make, like, different people of different identities hate each other, and so suddenly we're fighting ourselves against ourselves instead of the larger enemy, and boom, the system has divided us. So that's what we're up against.
And that's why I said earlier, you know, you guys are light years ahead of so many others, and that is to be honored. Can you guys, because we only have a little bit of time left, can you talk a little bit about your platform, the People's Platform? I love the name. It reminds me so much of the early days of the environmental justice movement, of folks coming together, defining themselves, defining the work that they're going to do. Can you guys just share briefly with them, and we can have folks go to your website also?
Yeah, so we can't always depend on our government to create change, and we do need systematic change, but we really need a lot of change on the local and state level as well. So this platform is really guiding people on what change they can make towards their local community and how they can work to build a more sustainable community and lifestyle that doesn't support these systems of oppression that are at the root of the climate crisis.
So I just want to say that, you know, we, for folks who, I only get the business side of the side, so when folks want to figure out more about Zero Hour, where they go to?
thisiszerohour.org or at thisiszerohour on social media.
And if folks want to find more about the march and need to come out, they go...
thisiszerohour.org, because that has our RSVP link, and you can RSVP. And just for everyone right now, like, it's on the National Mall. This is for the DC March on July 21st. 10:30 in the morning is when the rally starts. We're trying to, like, avoid the worst of the heat, so I'm sorry if you have to get up a little early. But it's... 10:30 National Mall,
7th Street.
It's really hard to miss. There's going to be like a giant stage and like thousands of people. So if you're on the National Mall, you'll probably like just look around and be like, oh, there's the march. And we'll be marching past the Senate building and past the Supreme Court and to Lincoln Park. And no, we are not marching past the White House. And a lot of people ask that because this is not an anti-Trump rally or anything. It's fighting for climate justice, and we would be doing this regardless of who's president. Like, if Hillary Clinton won, we'd still be marching. And yeah, Trump's not.
I like that. I like that. We march. Doesn't matter who's in office. We march. So now I'm tearing up my notes here. I want to get to some of the fun stuff. I got a little time for me because this is the Hip Hop Caucus. Thank 1%, the coolest show on climate change. Someone come down the list. I'm gonna start here with Nadia. Who is your favorite artist? So I mean, like, come on, we gonna move a little bit from climate to culture.
Okay.
Favorite artist, favorite song.
Frida Kahlo, and favorite song, Tiptoe by Imagine Dragons.
I like that. I like that. Madeline.
I'm going a little back to the Beatles.
What?
Strawberry Fields Forever.
We were like listening that. To them in the
y'all
car.
Y'all like old souls up in here. Y'all like, we got...
Hayley Kiyoko, Girls Like Girls.
I like that. Okay, okay. So from the culture, I'm going to go to the art side. So if you can create, it's about the future. Let's move forward. So if you're creating the future, from each one of you, I want you all just to think now. Let's think about it. If you can just wave your magic hip-hop caucus mug.
For all of you listening, I just spilled water because I was literally waving.
No, she was waving and she was doing it. I want y'all to speak to them now, each one of you. What would you want your future to look like? Now, you are now in the present. We got fossil fuels, but what would you want the future to look like? So I'm going to start down to end with Nadia. What does your future look like?
I want a future, a beautiful and sustainable future, a future that is biodiverse, where animals can live cohesively, where we're not pushing them away because of urban sprawl, and where we can live in a community of peace and love. There's a lot of hate happening right now, and that's not only fueling this issue, but so many other issues that relate to the climate crisis, and just a community of love and support.
Wow. Thank you. Madeline.
When I'm in school, when I'm taking classes and doing work, it's kind of always in the back of my mind, this movement and the urgency that we need to acknowledge. And so I'd say an ideal future for me is one in which we can, I guess, be present in what we're doing instead of having to kind of acknowledge this looming cloud over us. Mm-hmm.
Jamie.
Yeah, I would really agree with Madeline. I guess my ideal future would be, I've always wanted to be like the leader that I wish I had. So watching like people run for office and stuff, I was like, oh God, I could do so much better. Like, so I just remember me like being really little, like wanting to do that, wanting to be a leader. I just want a future where I have the ability to do that, and I just want a future where, like Madeline said, like you can focus on your passions, focus on what you're doing. Like Nadia loves art, and Madeline,
I would want to go into like business or finance. Yeah,
and I like love. I think I would still be fighting for social justice, but I really love like leadership and working with people and books and literature, and I just wish we could just have a future where we can just focus on our passions and just live our lives. Like, it's become so normalized among my generation where we just have this existential threat looming over us, and it would just be nice to have a future where we can just live our lives, do what we like, explore the possibilities, and then not have to worry about, like Madeline put it perfectly, this big cloud.
Well, I just want to tell y'all this. First of all, thank y'all for being on the show, and let me just tell you this, I give you some wisdom in this movement. One, you guys make me so happy to see what you're doing and how you're fighting, and never stop that. And we say hip hop can't stop, won't stop. But the one thing I'll just tell you, if you were to say, man, Rev, what's the one thing you would give? Man, always just have love. Don't let anybody steal your joy. Like, you're going to come across a lot of people and a lot of different things, and whatever you do in this movement, never stop having fun. Because when you stop having fun, you're done. Just always have fun, never stop smiling, and never forget to keep fighting for people. If that's the case, man, y'all are already on course. And hopefully you will, along with all of the other young people, I believe you will win. So just keep on fighting. Thank you for being a part of the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So with that, you've been listening to Hip Hop Caucus. Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. And what better way than to go out with, other than our co-host, who's not here, but she will be here on Saturday, marching with everybody else, a part of this process, the amazing Antoinique Smith. And speaking of a Beatles song, so this is a Beatles song here for Madeline, since you like the Beatles. What better way than to have Antoinique sing a Beatles song? Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling,
This is Reverend Lennox Yearwood Jr.
And this is Mustafa Santiago Ali.
We hope you enjoy this episode of Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. We have more episodes featuring stimulating conversations with some of today's most important and hottest figures in the climate and environmental movement and beyond.
Rev and I invite you to continue listening to more episodes and subscribe to our podcast. Visit think100.info for more. We're opening up a dialogue on climate change and would love for you to join the conversation. So subscribe now. And also, don't forget to follow us on social media at Think 100 Show and at Hip Hop Caucus.
Thanks again so much, and keep listening. All power to the people.